Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the By Yahweh's Design Family Chat here Wednesday night on the 24th of May, year 2023. We've had some really bad weather down here in South Florida, so we do apologize for running behind schedule. I did not get a chance because the internet and computers were out for a while, so I did not get a chance to send out any kind of notification, so we may have a light crowd tonight, but in the meantime, like I said, we can discuss a few things. I do want to put out a few tidbits of information I've been kind of made privy of here in the last few days. But an awful lot of the people, I think, that give the best intelligence out there as far as what's going on are all saying be careful over the next month or two. They believe that some kind of move is going to be made by the cabal, especially the bankers. So be ready for almost anything. And we will say again that this is a time that where you want to be in a position where you can hunker down for maybe as much as a month. Everybody that I know is recommending that. Every military guy I've ever interviewed said that all of us should be in that position pretty much every single day. And I've often said that where I grew up in Amish country, every farmhouse in the valley I lived in had a pantry supplied to where everybody in the household could stay boarded up for probably 5 or 6 months. And there was enough canned meat and canned food in the pantry that everybody would have food to eat. And since they all lived on farms, they obviously had livestock for meat. They also had gardens, and they had all those canned vegetables and canned meat. And many of the farmhouses had wood-burning stoves, wood-burning ovens for heat and for cooking. My grandfather's farmhouse, I can remember as a boy, it was my job to gather the wood to put into the kitchen stove when my aunts were getting ready to cook a meal. And that stove had a oven section and cooktop, and it was all fired by wood. And it was always that way until I was an adult before they ever put in an actual stove. And it had a furnace that ran off of coal. So again, if the cabal shut things down or if a storm shut things down, my grandfather's farmhouse was going to operate pretty much normally. They had kerosene lamps, they had candles, so they had heat, they had a way to cook, they had food preserved, the house was in good order, they had weapons and ammunition. So again, so hunkering down for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 months was not a big deal. Every farmer was pretty much in the same boat. We had wells so we could get water. We had creeks and ponds and streams. Again, plenty of water around. The necessities of life were what we had every single day. Many folks in suburban areas don't have that luxury, and they are at risk. So they're the ones that should either have a bug-out plan if things go south, or they should be in a position to stay hunkered down while the animals are out ravaging the neighborhoods if things go really, really bad. Now, Bill Holter was on with Greg Hunter on USA Watchdog, and his opinion was it might not get like Mad Max, but it could. And so since we're all like Boy Scouts, the Boy Scouts motto was you always prepare for the worst case scenario. And that's the same idea that the military has. You prepare for the worst case just in case that's what happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't hurt anything that you're prepared for it, right? So that's why I'm putting that out there. Be prepared for almost anything in these next 2-3 months. I don't know how many times we've said it, and you've got to have some provisions put away. You must have a way to defend yourselves as best you can, some form of weaponry. that you can either get a hold of or have in your possession right now. And I know some folks live in areas where that's not as easy as it is here in this country, but you still need to do everything you can, because once again, our safety belongs to us. I don't even know how I get this information, but some individual keeps sending me stuff on how to put together these cannabinoid kits, legal stuff, but it's cannabinoids, CBD products, and it's amazing how many food-grade containers of CBD products you can get from just a pound of dry material. A pound's not very much, folks, and there's a lot of doses, or I forget what the servings, that's it, servings in a jar or a container with that small amount of product. So again, you know, our Father has given us everything we need if we just get back to homesteading, get back to the land. Everything we need for our ailments, for our dentistry, for recovery, for our emotional state, such as Bach flowers. Dr. Bach lived over in England, and he developed what they call the Bach flower remedies, and Bach is B-A-C-H, Dr. Bach. And I've used the Bach flowers many times in my personal life and many of my friends and relatives, and it's amazing, but they work. He figured out a way for, I think it's either 20 or 25 different flower essences, and he formed a formula for any emotional issues. Let's say you're stressed out over a court case, you're stressed out over a relationship problem, whatever. You could answer these questions that he developed, and based on your answers, he knew which of the flowers to put into a tincture, to put in a 2-ounce bottle, and you just put 3 or 4 drops of this tincture under your tongue, and you would be amazed at how quickly that went into your system and would calm you right down. And again, I'm speaking from experience. Back when I was younger, there were many situations I was in. It was a very high stress thing, whether it was dealing with people in child protective or law enforcement or a court case for a friend or at work or whatever. And those drops would help every single person involved that was extremely stressed out. So it can deal with depression, anger, jealousy, fearfulness, you name it. But anyway, you can do the research, Dr. Bach and his flower essences and what they're good for. So again, the Father has given us many tools for us to deal with issues that we don't need Babylon. That's the beautiful thing of the message. We don't need Babylon. The book of Revelation talks about Babylon burning. He tells us to come out of Babylon because he's going to punish Babylon. Babylon is going to self-destruct. And we don't want to go down with that ship, just like the people on the Titanic. We want to be in the lifeboats rowing far away, so when that big old ship goes down under, it doesn't drag us down with it. And that's what's happening right now. Everybody that I know that has a good heart and understands who we are and who our Father is preparing and looking inwardly for self-sufficiency. That's the key for survival right now, self-sufficiency. And networking with like-minded people, both to share information and possibly even at some point we'll start a bartering system. I just read an article and I shared it with a lot of people today. There are 10 states in the United States, red states, Florida being one of them, Texas being one, Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, Alabama and South Carolina, Tennessee, and Indiana, and I believe Missouri. So there are states primarily in the southeastern part of this country that are joining at the state level, they're joining in the legislatures to put methods of keeping us out of this beast economic system. So I'm not sure what their spiritual state is, but at least they recognize the danger of a centralized bank digital currency and this cabal trying to wrap us up under a dictatorial system where you have virtually zero financial privacy anymore, which means they'll have total control. So 10 states, and there are other states that are looking into the matter, but they have not passed legislation. These 10 southeastern United States states have already passed laws to help the people fight back, and they are establishing and opening the pathway to alternative methods of payment outside of the Federal Reserve, which would also include gold and silver as legal tender, and open the door for, I think, cryptocurrency if people want to use it. It's up to the person, and cash, of course. If the Federal Reserve tries to debase our cash, each state could create their own equivalent to a Federal Reserve note. Every state could do it, and we could do it at the county level even. We don't need permission from the federal government to have our own currency. Okay? It's been done. It's been done for decades in this country, and we could duplicate it again. So again, the father's going to open up doors. It's just a matter of, do we want to fight the beast or not? If we're willing to do whatever it takes, then doors will open and we'll be able to do that. So just stay alert to that effect. All the watchmen out there are saying, just be very, very observant of the world around you over the next 2 to 3 months. Things could get pretty dicey. So I just want to give that warning out there. I don't really have any other major issues to talk about at the moment, so I'm going to go ahead and open up the floor for discussion here. I'll unmute Ella. Lane, you're unmuted if you want to say something, or just mute yourself. And then Matt over in Ireland. Okay, you guys are all unmuted. So, again, has anybody else heard anything that we should be on a lookout over the next couple months? Have you heard anything, Matt?
Dan, I've heard.
Oh, go ahead, Ella.
I was just going to say, I have heard in a few places that they're preparing for another kind of a false flag. I don't know what that's going to be or anything, but it might have to do with the next month or two, as you were talking about.
Yeah, I did see something about that they may try to roll out the next, quote, COVID scaredemic. They're already trying to lay the groundwork as that's being one of the possibilities, claiming there's something even more deadly and dangerous than the one that never existed to begin with. They could go that route, but there are a lot of people now aware that that's a complete lie, so they may have a backup. So that's why I think everybody's saying be very, very careful.
I just
Go
got a
ahead.
text about 15 minutes ago from CVS Pharmacy. Reminded me that I need to get a booster, or I need to get the vaccine. It's important. So maybe that has something to do with what's coming up. I don't know. And I just wanted to pat you on the back for mentioning that Dr. Bot stuff, because it really is good stuff. I have some right here. It's a Rescue Plus for sleep. It's Bach Remedy, Bach Rescue. And it comes in little gummies. If you take them two of them before bed, they don't put you to sleep, but they let you sleep and they relax. And I swear by them, they are wonderful. And
Oh,
another thing that people can buy that is excellent is lemon balm extract powder. If the powder and you make tea of not hot water, but like a little bit over warm water, and if you drink that before bed, it does the same thing as Bach does. It relaxes you, it slows down your mind. You're not in a whirlwind thinking like anyone lays down at night and they start thinking constantly, did I do this, did I do that, are the kids in bed, is my husband home, is yada yada yada. You don't sleep because you're thinking too much. Well, that lemon balm extract, just like, it's like having a half a shot of whiskey without the whiskey. It just lets you calm down and you stop worrying and stop thinking about things. And there's a comparison with the CBD with THC in it. I have tried everything. I could give a report on it. The CBD with THC that is expensive. A month's supply of and gummies were for only one cost $80 total. That's much too heavy for my budget. Can't do it. But the lemon, I found 16 ounces of it for less than $20. That's enough to last me a year. And I that just came in the mail. I got that, so I'm all that. The thing that I am concerned about now is not food stock or anything. It's if they should mess around with the grid and shut down the electric power. Out where I live and out where a lot of people live in the boondocks, you would have no water anymore unless you had a well. And if you have no electricity, anything that you put in the refrigerator or freezer is gone. So you have to think about that. If you stock up on water, make sure you get the kind of foods and everything that don't require heat. Because if you don't have your electricity, you're going to be stuck. A lot of people don't think about that. I didn't. Last time we had a lightning storm, and it knocked out. No, it wasn't. It was freezing during, and I was without electricity for, I think it was 4 days. And I was miserable. So that's about, let's see, anything else. Okay, also valerian root extract is excellent for helping you relax and go to sleep. It does not put you to sleep. It won't make you sleepy. So if you're upset in the middle of the afternoon and you're stressed out, just put some of that under your tongue or take it with a few drops of water, and within 5 minutes, you're relaxed more. So those things work, the lemon balm extract powder and the valerian root extract.
Yep.
Okay, and I'll yield.
Yep, the beautiful thing is they're all natural, and the Bach flower remedies are what they call homeopathics. And any homeopathic remedy will not interfere with pharmaceuticals or any other program that you might be on. So they're not. A lot of people say, well, my doctor should approve it and whatever. Well, you can run it by your doctor if you want. But the nature of homeopathics is that it's more like an energy thing. That's why it's called Bach flower essences. So it's not like you're actually taking a drug. You're taking a homeopathic that has captured the essence of the flower, and the essence is transferred to you, and it will calm you down or settle you down. But it does not change anything at the physiological level. In other words, with your actual body, chemistry, or anything else. So again, that's why they're very, very handy to have, very nice to use, because there is no such thing as an overdose. I had a whole bottle. I think it was either a 2 or 4 ounce bottle of Rescue Remedy from Bach Flower. And I handed it to my buddy because he was extremely stressed out over some issues going on in his family. And before I could tell him to put just 2 or 3 drops under his tongue, he opened up the bottle and drank the whole bottle. So, needless to say, he was an extremely mellow fellow shortly after that. But the beautiful thing again was there was no concern over overdosing. It was just an extremely wasteful thing to do, because a few drops would have done the same thing, but he drank the whole bottle down and it was gone. So I had to get another bottle. But again, our Father provides for us. If we take the time to search these things out and share information, we find out that many of the beautiful things in this world that actually do work will help us. They're not that hard to find, and they're not expensive. They just take a little bit of practice and time to learn to identify them and how to cultivate them, and they literally grow almost everywhere. Go ahead, Ella.
Yeah, the other thing, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Okay. Yeah, you're breaking up.
The one thing I forgot to mention, too, that I have a jar.
You're breaking up on my end. Is it breaking up for other people, too?
Yeah.
You just broke up a couple times.
Yeah, I think it's your connection, Ella.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to mention that people who go to bed at night and like use a lip balm or a Carmex or something to moisten their lips, because I know a lot of the people in my family do this, and buying the Carmex and stuff like that is getting kind of expensive too. You can buy lemon balm salve. A 4-ounce jar of it will last you probably 2 years. It's great for medication for wounds, scrapes, anything that at all. And also, it'll get rid of any cold sores that you have. Just a little touch of this on your lips keeps them soft and moist almost all day. And it's excellent stuff. I've been using it for about a month now, and it's better than anything I've ever tried. And it's quite inexpensive. You can get it on the internet. Lemon balm salve.
Yep. Lemon balm is good to grow for a lot of things. Yep.
Can I ask? I have a linguistic pun for you.
Sure.
You were saying that you are very fortunate that when you grew up that the insects around your house were very intelligent. They could even cook.
What?
Well, you said you could have ants that could cook. Well, I have ants around my house, but none of them will come in and cook.
Oh, you're being...
Because I have aunts. I don't have aunts. My aunts are still outside, but my aunt, or my relatives, are very nice women.
Oh, okay. So we should go to Spanish then. Tio and tia, huh? That's the beauty of the English language. You can pronounce things exactly like something else that's spelt completely differently. Almost no other language is as messed up as American English when it comes to that. But then again, it's because our language in the States is made up of the combination of Celtic and German and Finnish and Spanish and Italian and French and German, Austrian, Swedish, you name it. I mean, we got words and sayings and all that come from all those languages. And then you throw in the Amish, where I grew up, and they have their own way of saying things, quite different than anywhere else. So, and their language is based primarily on German. But it's a dialect that's one of their own. And so just like they have an expression to red up a room, you know, and when I've traveled to other parts of the country, I used to say to the kids, okay, it's time to go to bed, so go red up your room. And all my friends would look at me and go, what the hell are you talking about? Red up a room. Well, that's an Amish expression meaning to clean the room, to organize the room, okay? But I thought everybody said that until I left the Amish country and started living in other parts of the country. And then I realized, no, nobody else says that. So, you know, it's just like the word for water, W-A-T-E-R, is in some parts of the country, it's pronounced water. So it can be water or water. And then there's a few places that's even different, more different than that. I think even Boston, I think, Ella, you used to live up in that area. I think they pronounce it even more different than that.
They say wada.
Wada. So,
Boston drops their R's, park your car in Harvard Yard. That's the way I used to talk.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's like I was starting to study German a little bit. And then I come to find out that between northern Germany and central Germany and southern Germany, they pronounce things differently. Like the word for I is ish. To me, it's ish, I-C-H, ish. But there's parts of Germany where it's pronounced ich Okay, so even in Germany, they've got the same problem we do. They're not consistent going from southern Germany to northern Germany. It transfers. Just like Spanish down here in Florida, you'll hear people speaking Spanish. And I had a friend, the neighbor, Vicky, she was at the same place at the beach one day that we were. And I was talking to her, and I heard this guy speaking Spanish down there. And she goes, oh, that guy's very well educated. And I looked at her and I go, how do you know that? She goes, because he's speaking Castellano. I said, okay, fill me in. What do you mean Castellano? Castellano is high Spanish, whereas regular Spanish is not. And it's got different ways of saying it, different ways of pronouncing it. And then I find out the Puerto Ricans speak a little different variety of Spanish. The Mexicans speak another variety of Spanish. So there's a lot of inconsistencies. That's why it always gets me when people start to criticize. I was at a meeting back in the early 2000s, and I said something in German, and this guy in the back of the room said, excuse me. And I stopped my speech, and I looked at him, and I said, well, what's the matter? He said, you didn't say that right. I said, well, what do you mean? I didn't pronounce it right. And that's when I found out, like the word ish or ich, okay? It depends what part of Germany you're from. So it wasn't that it was wrong what I was saying. It was wrong to him because he came from a different part of Germany. And his family still speaks German, and they speak this other region's form of German. But the point I got upset was, why would you interrupt me while I'm giving an address to people because I don't pronounce it the same way you do? Okay? Even in the little country of Wales, and I learned this from one of our Welsh brethren over there who contacted me, even in as small of a country as Wales are, there's a difference in pronunciations and syntax going from the northern part of Wales to the southern part of Wales. And Wales is not very big at all. So even in their country, they have differences. So why would any of us get bent out of shape because somebody doesn't pronounce it exactly the way we think it should be pronounced? I mean, come on, as long as we understand what we're trying to say to one another, that's the whole object of language, is to convey what's in my brain to your brain. That's the purpose of language. It's a tool to get the thoughts out of my head and get those exact same thoughts into your head. It doesn't matter if we pronounce words exactly the same or even use them in the same context. If I can get you to form a mental image that's the same as what's in my brain, then the language or words I used are successful. That's what's important. Now, I will admit, the more structured a language is and the more uniform it's used and pronounced, the better your odds of getting your thoughts transferred to other people. But the main point is that we do get the point across. That's what's important. Not that we totally agree on word usage or word pronunciation. I see Ralph has joined us. So we got our Canadian in here tonight. So we got two Texans and Canadian and Irishman all right here. So we're scattered all over the world. Just like salt. Where have I heard that before? Oh, that's right. It's in the Bible. You know, scatter you like salt. So we are scattered like salt. So I yield. Anybody else got a question or something they want to bring to the... looking at the notes here. Oh, Al, that's right, Al. I owe you that number. Let me write that down. Let's see here. Yep. All righty. Yeah, I got it written down, so I'll try to take care of that as soon as I get off the call here tonight. Ralph, everything good up there with you in Canada? Or you got anything that you want to share with us? Why not put it in the chat room and I'll read it. Or Ella can read it, whoever's looking into the chat. Let's see. What else is going on? Other than the crazy weather, the crazy behavior of people, I do notice that people are very agitated lately. lots of people. I went to help out a neighbor today, and she's an older lady. She's probably, let's see, she was born in 1936. So that puts her just below my father's age. And she needed some paperwork witnessed, so I said I would come over and witness it for her. And we got talking, and we were sharing on how we both can see that the world is in very dire conditions right now. And she does what she can to wake up friends and family. And I told her, of course, that that's what I try to do. And so we had a nice little about 10-minute conversation about that. The point of it is, though, that there's a lot of people at all different levels, all different age groups, all different economic levels that are now beginning to realize that some things are seriously, seriously wrong in this world. And I never, when years ago I started teaching and started a radio show, I never dreamed it would take this much pressure to get our people to wake up. I would have thought we would have been totally awake by now with far less evil in this world. It amazes me that the evilness in this world has reached this level. And we still have people that are dead asleep. It just boggles my mind. And we used to debate this and talk about this at some of the gatherings I went to, is what will it take for our Father to wake our people up? And back then we used to kind of guess at it and said, well, we pretty much knew our people are very stiff-necked, very stubborn, and somewhat narcissistic. They certainly are. The universe revolves around them as an individual. So we surmised back about 20 years ago that the Father was going to have to hit us up with something very, very hard to get our attention and then to get us to repent. And by gosh, that's exactly what it seems to have played out to be. I mean, this is just unbelievable. The amount of stupidity, the amount of wickedness, the degeneracy, the perversion, the government corruption, which is just, I was talking to my son earlier today, and he was remarking about how corrupt government is and how hard it is to comply and how they don't do things for us. And I said, just look at the government as if it's a mafia, organized crime. I said, if you look at them as organized crime, then everything the government does makes perfect sense, because our governments are run by criminals. Global, worldwide criminals. And at the top of this organization of criminals is, of course, your satanic Zionist communist Jews and their control over the financial systems. But that's the whole, that's where corporations came from. Everything that centralizes power or control is communist, or you could say Jewish, because they don't have the ability to control everybody. They're only a few in number. They've got tremendous wealth, but they only have a few people. So how do you control billions of people on the earth with this handful of people? Because they don't want every Jew to be that powerful. There's a lot of Jews that are put down at the same level as you and me. They look at them as useless eaters. But the powerful ones, the rich ones at the top, are small in numbers, so the only way they can maintain control is to centralize everything. You look at Russia, how the Zionist Bolsheviks got into power through terror, but how were they going to stay in power? They had to centralize government control. Now that gave them great power. And they've done the same thing in the corporate world, the business world, the industrial world, even in the sports world. Look at the sports. Everything now has to be approved by what? A commission. What's a commission? It's the same thing as a commissar or a commune, a commissioner. It's all in the same vein. It's a person who's put in position of power over a multitude of people. Instead of power being at the local level, as the law of God says, and Moses in his Exodus 18 model, the power was at the local level, where the Jews turned it upside down. They want all the power at that tiny little point of the pyramid that they can control all the masses below it. So they invent all these different mechanisms to do that, which is centralization, centralized World Council of Churches. There you go. Okay, the WHO, centralization, United Nations, centralization, corporations, centralization, the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, same thing. In fact, it was interesting. I think it was when the derelict Obama came in, he called them his czars. They didn't even hide it. Okay, so we had a FCC czar. We had a Federal Drug Administration czar. We had a BATF czar. We had czars for everything. So they weren't even hiding the fact that it was pure Soviet Bolshevik communism. Consolidate their control. We need to, and people are starting to wake up. I'm seeing a lot of good articles by some very prominent people lately that have made that observation. And now they are trying to warn people and get people to wake up to what the communists are up to. Were you trying to say something, Matt?
Oh, I speaking thoughts out loud, Dan. Apologies for interrupting.
Oh, no, that's fine.
I was just saying I didn't know that that Obama said that, but I think it's the same thing for a lot of our people. They don't care unless it affects them directly. I was giving out to my mother about the new hate speech laws that they're bringing in here, and it's the attitude of, oh well, you know, just keep your head down, and I'm like, you're missing the point, like. These will eventually trickle down. These laws will eventually get bigger and bigger and worse. And it's like, oh well, I don't hate anyone, so you know, I don't have any problem there. This is the thing with people. It's kind of it's frustrating for everyone, but that's the thing about the normie, isn't it? They as long as they can watch the telly every night after work, and you know, that's all they care about.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It's apathy. And it's some of it, not all of it, but some of it is cowardice. We have a lot of people amongst us that are just afraid. They're afraid of being called names. They're afraid that something will be taken away from them. They're afraid of a lot of things. And so even if we don't like to say it, many of us know people that would fit in that category. They're not totally ignorant, but they're basically cowards. They don't want to face it. They don't want to get involved because it could cost them something. I don't know. You could maybe even say it's a lack of faith. That's why I've told a lot of people I've met and a lot of my family and friends even. I said, you know, you go to church. You profess to be a believer in the God of the Bible. I said, but you don't exhibit anything of what the Bible talks about. I don't see anything of what the Bible teaches in your life. You sit there and allow perverts to dance around as queers in your neighborhood. You allow perverts access to children. You allow babies in mothers' wombs to be murdered. You allow homosexuals in your church and to get married in your church. You allow interracial marriage to happen in your church and even perform the weddings in your churches. These are all violations of God's law. How do you justify that? I don't get it. How do you justify that?
You can't.
No. So I guess we're at that point where he said that there are many, many people who are going to fall into that category of the lukewarm, who he detests and hates, by the way. And he said that they would not come into the kingdom. He would vomit them out. So obviously, if he's going to vomit them out of his mouth, he does not intend for them to come into the kingdom. Other verses come right out and say it. Cowards are part of the crowd that will not see the kingdom. And I really don't know why they're so afraid. They're so afraid. Well, I mean, you know.
I'll tell you, it's great to be a young man, particularly these days, because the likes of myself, all I own is the shirt on my back and a couple of books on my shelf, you know, so you don't really have a whole lot to lose. But even the couple of buddies that I have that know the crack and will accept a lot of the things that I say, they will still never say it to anyone else. They'll keep it to themselves. They'll keep it shut, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do, yeah, you don't want to cast your pearls in front of swine, so that's true. But all of us should be looking for the people that show signs of spiritual awakening. Usually you can tell in their eyes. Sometimes you can tell by the vibration of their voice. But between the two, their voice, their body language, and number three, their eyes. Those three things, if you're observing of them, they'll often tell you that somebody's ready to hear a little piece. Just give them a little piece, a little baby food of truth, and see how they handle it. Over to you, Matt.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I think the line between cowardice and prudence is very thin. And it has to be... the guys that I know that are like what I just said there a moment ago, these are guys that I fought with, like, you know, like I fought with them on the streets. Like, they're not cowards per se, you know what I mean? They'll fight right. You like, but it's public scrutiny. It's weird the way we work, the way we're wired to avoid it, you know, because we want to be accepted. So it's a thin mm-hmm. line.
That's true. That's true. And sometimes only the person themselves knows which side of that line that they're on. Because if people are being prudent, that's not a sign of cowardice. Like you said, that's just being prudent, being wise, being cautious. But I do know for a fact some of my friends and some of my family, they don't say anything because literally they're afraid. They're afraid of being called a bad name. They're afraid of losing a friend, afraid of losing a job. So it's fear. It's not prudence. It's just downright fear. So it's a mixture. And again, I don't say that to condemn anybody because I don't know. I'm not on the inside. Only our Creator Father has that wisdom and has that knowledge. Ralph says here that John Kaminsky posted a vid on wheat shortage. And then Ralph here says that he told him it's all genetically modified Roundup sprayed garbage and sent back a vid on how to grow potatoes indoors. Yeah, that's kind of funny because I'm growing potatoes myself right here beside my small home in a small strip of ground. We can grow, and my son's been looking into this for about 3 years now. You can grow a tremendous amount of food in a small footprint of ground. There are books about it. There's videos, how-to videos. So don't let the size of your patio or even in an apartment. If you're in an apartment that has access to the roof or has a large balcony, you would be surprised of how much, especially in a vertical tower, and even in buckets and planters and stuff like that, you would be surprised how much you can grow. It's almost shocking I forget the square footage, but it's pretty small square footage. You can easily grow enough to feed a family of four. And so size of the amount of ground you have or where you're at should not be a concern. So everybody should be doing that right now. They should be gathering up heirloom seeds. You might want to take note of the fact that the Russians have been stockpiling heirloom seeds for over a decade, and they have a huge vault built into the side of a mountain where they store these seeds. So let me ask you a question. If the Russians are doing that, why do you think they're doing that? Okay. Again, the Russians have got this huge storage facility buried into the side of a mountain, and they're putting just huge quantities of heirloom seeds in there. I think it's because they know food is going to be used as a weapon. They also know that Monsanto and these other Jewish companies have been working to destroy pure seeds. They've spent tens of millions of dollars to develop what they call Terminator seeds. Why do you think they call them Terminator seeds? Terminate you and me, folks. Because Terminator plants do not produce seed. That does two things. That makes you come back to Monsanto for next year's crop, but it also means that you cannot grow your own food, and Terminator crops do not have the nutrition that are in heirloom organic food. Go ahead, Matt.
Do you think that the organic food that we get on the shelf is actually organic?
Some of it is, and some of it is not. There's an organization called the Weston A. Price Organization, and there are several others. Weston A. Price has a website where they will tell you which companies they found to be true and which ones have lied. And trust me, there's quite a few that have lied about.
I'd say majority.
Right. And I interviewed Mishka Popov from Russia. He lives over here in the United States. His family moved to Canada just before the Bolsheviks took over. And now he has left Canada, where he worked as a inspector of organic farms. And now he lives in Texas, and he's been my guest and friend ever since I interviewed him a couple years ago. But he'll tell you that as an inspector, there were many, especially of these corporate farms, these bigger farms, that are not organic. You're going to have much better luck with the little local farmer and the little local rancher to find truly organic material, because once they become, quote, incorporated, here we go again with incorporation, they're all about producing massive quantities because they want to make profits. And as soon as a farmer puts more emphasis on profits than he does the quality of his food, it will no longer be organic. Some of them have learned how to lobby. That's the word I'm thinking of. They learned a long time ago how to lobby legislators to get them through bribery to change the wording of laws to allow the charlatans and quacks to put organic on their label to get away with it, because they knew people were starting to get wise to them, and so they debased the criteria to be called organic. And even here in the United States, I was told years ago, you have to go certified organic, and it has to be certified organic by a reputable agency here in the United States. It can't, you know, and I can't remember the name of them all, so... But you want to be wary of that. Do a little bit of research. But the Weston A. Price Organization does go and list the companies that they have found that have lied about their organic certification. So there's some very good ones out there, but there are some fake ones. I see we got Jonathan and David here, so I'll go ahead and unmute. We're in the open discussion at the time here. Jonathan, if you had anything you wanted to share with us. Okay. Guess not at the moment. Anything else, folks? Like I said, I don't. Pretty much that's all I had for tonight. We do have a lot of people starting to wake up. I was blessed to be part of a conversation the other night. It turned into a 3-hour conference call, video conference call. And the beginning of the conference call had to do with common law and different things like that. But then we went into an open forum for the last hour to an hour and a half. And we got into basically a Bible study. And so we were able to get into what the scriptures actually say versus what most of the world says. We got into the Father's name. I was pleased to find out the gentleman that was a guest from Canada, he already knew a lot of that. There was a lady that was there. She knew a lot of it. There were two other people there had never heard that kind of stuff, but they were going to look into it. So, again, you know, the Father can use a lot of different methods to get his word out there, and that turned into that during that discussion. Unfortunately, I had to sit through almost 2 hours of discussion about things that were they were important, but at this stage of the game where we're at right now, this warfare is going to get very, very serious. And that's why it was nice that we were able to get the spiritual state of our people and their relationship with our Father as a major topic of discussion rather than how to fight these people in their sandbox, because they own the sandbox that we're in. So it's a rigged game, and we have to understand that. Just like there was a very good video I watched that says when you go into a courtroom and you have a lawyer, you have an enemy agent right beside you. His loyalty and his oath of loyalty is to the system. That's the only reason they allow him to be, quote, licensed as a lawyer. He has taken an oath that he will represent the system if it comes down to it, rather than the client. So you just need to be aware of that. So did anybody have anything else? I yield.
Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just going to make vodka. Do you have any ideas?
No, but I'm sure I can find out in a hurry. I do know originally vodka, of course, came from Russia, and they made it from potatoes.
That's what made me think of it.
Right. Vodka is a potato, distilled potato. I don't even know what you would call it. They don't use hops and grains. Somehow they make it from potatoes. Now, I guess in America, they have some distilleries that make it from grains. I don't know how you call it vodka if you do that, but they do. But in Russia, for many years, the Russian people lived on potatoes, a lot of potatoes, because it was one of the staple crops that they could grow over there, huge quantities. In fact, up until recent history, 80% of the potato crops used in Russia came from family farms. 80% family farms, small family farms. So they have not lost the old ways. Like some of us, quote, more modern countries. And so they still produce a lot of stuff on little family plots. They have a name for it, and it escapes me what it's called. I read it in a book here recently, but that it's basically homesteading, what we call homesteading. They have a Russian word for it, but it's small, I think 10 acres or less. Family farms produce a tremendous amount of their food. So, but we'll look into that. Oh, Matt says, here's, would you say my granddad's nearly 90? He often drinks a bottle a day, sometimes more. Of what, vodka?
No, whiskey.
Oh, whiskey.
Mm.
That's quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a bit too much. I couldn't drink that much.
I don't know. I could not drink. I've never been able to drink that much, to be honest with you. When I used to go out with my friends and all,
I want to make elixirs.
What?
I want to make elixirs, so I want to learn how to make the vodka. Because I had hard to go to the store to buy it. Too bad I kind of put on a false face to go into a liquor store. I haven't been in one for 20 years.
Right. Well, there's a couple good things about vodka. That's why most of the naturopaths that I know, they use vodka to stabilize their tinctures. Number one, you don't smell the alcohol like you do with whiskey and others, but the alcohol that's in it will help preserve the tincture. So most of the naturopathic people that had the classes that I was taking, they would recommend that you use vodka. Case in point, to stop a heart attack, you can carry a small vial, and I believe the ratio is 4 parts vodka, 1 part cayenne pepper. So you shake it up, carry it in your pocket, but 4 parts vodka, 1 part cayenne pepper, keep it in a little vial on your person, and if you or somebody you know is suspected of having a heart attack, you get them to drink that, and it will stop the heart attack.
Do you know, can you preserve cayenne pepper if you keep it out of light?
It can be preserved, I believe, for quite a long time. What the conditions are, I don't remember. Most things that you want to preserve, you want to keep it out of the light.
Right.
Like your colloidal silver, I know you're not supposed to keep it in light. Most of the herbs are in dark-colored glass. That usually is an indication that they want to keep it dark and not exposed to light. So I would say, yeah, you know, even potatoes and things like that, we used to keep them in root cellars, out of the sunlight and at a cooler temperature, a stable cooler temperature out of sunlight. And then it would not go to seed. You could keep it. I can't remember how long it would stay that way, but it was much, much longer than if you left it out exposed. So
I know that if you have apples and if you keep them in a cardboard box like you would with eggs, they will last for months. That's what my granddad used to do, funnily enough.
Really? Now, the eggs,
yeah.
We're talking about natural
apples.
Eggs. It's apples and
not
eggs.
Eggs. No,
oh,
not eggs at all. But
okay.
But if you keep apples in a cardboard box like you would store eggs so that they're not touching each other, they will last for months.
Okay, so they're not touching each other. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the first I've heard of that, but I can believe it. But also, eggs... Actual organic eggs from the farmer, if you don't wash them off, you don't need to refrigerate them. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yes. Now, think about this for a minute. The hen sits on those eggs. They don't go bad. There's a coating on the egg from the mother hen that preserves the eggs. So if you harvest the eggs, and we used to do this on the farm, so I know this is true. If you reach in and grab the eggs out of the nest and you put them in your basket, if you do not wash that coating off you can set those eggs on your counter, and we used to let them sit there sometimes for a week, week and a half, and they would not go bad. So you don't have to, natural eggs now, we're talking about eggs from real chickens, not that garbage from the corporate farms. We're talking about the free ranged in the hen house and all that, and the rooster is part of the process. If you take those natural eggs and you do not wash off that coating, those eggs can be preserved for quite a spell without refrigeration. Not to mention the fact they're going to taste at least 10 times better than what's at the store. Trust me, I've done it. It's unbelievable, the flavor in a real egg versus the corporate produced mass-produced white ones that are down at the store. Those are, they have no taste at all compared to real chicken eggs. It's just amazing. So again, we've been told, you know, the media has told us that, oh, you got to get them in the refrigerator, keep them in the refrigerator, and don't eat too many eggs because of cholesterol and different things like that. Whereas the truth of the matter is, what they told you isn't necessarily wrong, because they're talking about the white corporate produced eggs. Yes, you do have to refrigerate them. Yes, if you eat too many of those, you're going to have problems with your health. Farm fresh eggs, though, like my grandfather ate, he ate anywhere from 6 to 8 eggs every single morning of his entire life, and he lived to be 80-some years old. And a healthy, tall, healthy, strong farmer. But his eggs were real eggs, and real eggs that are fertilized and organic have lecithin in them, and lecithin is what the body uses to break down cholesterol. So, again, I have done the same things. Yeah, Ralph says that those farm eggs, if you do put them in the refrigerator, will last up to 4 months. That's true. I'm just saying if you had no power and refrigeration was out, they would still last up to 2 weeks sitting on the shelf, sometimes even longer. But if you do stick them in the refrigerator, they last, like he said, up to 4 months, again, because they have that protective coating. So, again, they lie to us in a way by omission. They're not telling us that it's the white corporate eggs that will harm you and you should only eat a few of them and you have to keep them refrigerated, whereas the way our Heavenly Father made them, they're not harmful to you. They're very nutritious. They are extremely flavorful. In fact, it was only recently that I ate some of raw egg. For years and years, when I used to read about certain bodybuilders and stuff that would eat raw eggs, I used to think to myself that that sounds terrible. So it was maybe 6 months ago, I was whipping up some eggs, and of course the bowl was coated with the yolk and the egg, and so was the spoon or the fork I was using to whip up the egg. And instead of washing it out like I normally did, I just took my finger and just went around the bowl, and I licked it off, and I licked off the fork, and I was amazed. It was delicious. All those years, I thought it would taste terrible, and here, it was absolutely delicious. So eating a raw egg would not be hard for me now at all. It tastes
Very good for you. My old man used to drink them.
Right, right. Yep, I've had a couple of friends that used to do that. Now, I don't do that very often, but the point of it is I did find out that it's not as bad as I assumed it was. It was actually very tasty, and if I wanted to, I could do that. And a lot of times now, I'll undercook my eggs on purpose and leave them a little bit on the runny side, because the more natural the egg, the more benefit from the egg you get. So I try to cook them only slightly compared to the old way I did it. So even as old as I am, still learning things. That's one of the beautiful things I've always said is every day of my life I've learned something new. My whole life, something new almost every day of my life. You never stop learning. I like what it says. You live as if you're going to die tomorrow, but you learn as if you're going to be here for 1,000 years. And that's been my attitude all along. I keep learning because a lot of my friends said, Dan, you're near the end, buddy. Why are you still got all those books? Why are you still reading? Why are you still studying? I said, because I don't take for granted he's going to take me out of here when you think that normal time is. Maybe I will be here for 1,000 years. Who knows? Some of us will be. What's that?
Plenty more to go.
Exactly. Ella put in here, lecithin emulsifies cholesterol. Cholesterol is vital for your health. Yes, it is. It helps heal broken blood vessels. Too low of cholesterol can kill you. Stop taking statins. Yep, amen. I learned that a long time ago. Statins are not good. They kill your liver. High cholesterol does not cause heart attacks because you had a heart attack, your cholesterol elevates to heal the damage. Yeah, I have read that in other places too, so that's a double witness to what Ella is talking about.
Well, everything today is a lie, isn't it? Everything.
Everything is a lie, yes. It's amazing.
My mother was saying to me, the sun has just kind of come out here over the last couple of weeks. She says, I never wear sunscreen. I don't wear it. I refuse to wear it. My mother was saying, you know, you're wearing sunscreen. I said, no. She said, why would I wear sunscreen? She says, I put it on every day, she says. And I looked at her, I said, what? I said, you're mad. She said, yeah, the UV rays. And I said, stop, will you?
The ingredients in that sunscreen is a poison.
Yeah, that's where you're going to get the cancer, not the sun.
No, that's right. That's right.
And this is from a woman that had it, you know.
But they don't learn. I interviewed Dr. Kelly many years ago, William Kelly. He had written a book. He cured himself of pancreatic cancer when he was 33 years old. He was a dentist. After he was able to cure himself, he quit dentistry and went into full-time helping people to naturally get over cancer. And when I first met him, he was in his 70s, and he was spry. And he told me the story about a woman who had a son, a woman who had cancer. The doctors had sent her home to die, and so she contacted Dr. Kelly. Dr. Kelly said, well, how long did they give you to live? And she said, I think 4 months. He said, I usually need at least 6 months for my program to kick in and help. He said, but we'll give it a go. So he dove right in, immediately sent her some stuff to help her, and long story short, she came out of it. And I think it was 15 years later, her son got cancer. And Dr. Kelly's on the radio with me, and he said, Dan, who do you think she called when her son got cancer? I said, unfortunately, she probably called the doctor, didn't she? He goes, exactly right. She called the same medical professionals that sent her home to die instead of Dr. Kelly, even though Dr. Kelly helped her get over her cancer. The stiff-neckedness, the brainwashing, the program behavior of our people, it beggars description. I can't even put my head around it. I just don't know. I started taking lessons, and I finally graduated from the school back in, I'm looking at the certificate now, I think it was 2005. And I didn't do it to make money. I wanted the knowledge for myself and for my close family, and hopefully to friends and coworkers. My disappointment was that in the course of my time since 2005, almost nobody has asked for any information about how to fix anything naturally. Even though they know me, they know what it's done for me, But they still run to the doctor. They still run to the pharmacy. It's amazing. Matt, you were saying something.
Yeah, most reject it. That's the problem. They don't care at all. They're too brainwashed. It's incessant. It's incessant. The likes of my old man was doing the MMS, and I did a bit of it myself also, and the DMSO, and my aunt has she's a fungal infection on her foot for years and years, and she can't get rid of it. And my old man said, you know, try the DMSO. He said, no, my doctor wouldn't, I don't know about that. My doctor wouldn't say anything about that, so I won't take it.
Yeah, the same doctor that can't do a damn thing for her.
Right.
Yeah, I've reached the point several years ago, and I told my friends and family, I said, I'm done with you. I said, you're not going to hear me talk about natural health and those things anymore. I've heard you bitch and moan. Don't tell me what to eat. Don't tell me this. Don't tell me that. You don't have a lab coat. You don't have a stethoscope. You don't have MD after your name. I don't want to hear it. So I'm not going to talk to you people anymore. I'm done. You're on your own. I wish you the best. I love you. But I'm done talking to you. Just done.
It's scoff-worthy, isn't it? When this whole COVID nonsense started a couple of years ago, I had to scoff at my mother, because she would say, I've done my research. Like, my mother took the vaccines. I think she took four of them. And she said, oh, I've done my research. And I said, did you know? You've done your research, have you? She said, no research done whatsoever. Just whatever the telly says, and, you know, a quick Google search. Doesn't bother looking at any governmental documents. It was so easy, Dan, to go on UK Gov, look at COVID vaccine injuries, and just watch them week by week go up and up and up. And you mean to tell me you've done your research?
Yeah, they say that to shut us up. Yeah.
But the problem with the likes of myself, I'm only a young man. Like, I just turned 25 a few weeks ago. So the problem is with someone like me, who has done any bit of research, even though I'm a layman in most things, I'm a layman. The long and the short of it is, if you're older than me, you know better.
Right. Right. What could you possibly know? You're a young man, right?
Yeah.
We're like my family. What could you possibly know? You didn't go to medical school.
But it'd be the same difference, Dan. Even if I was an old man, it would still that would be the next response, and there'd be another response. There's an excuse for everything, but good people make excuses for bad people's actions.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, yeah, it's the state of the world we live in, and it's very, very unfortunate. But
you'd often wonder if our people ever had any common sense to begin with.
Well, the unfortunate thing is that most do not. That gets us into the discussion of why I keep talking about monarchies. Why did our people, for many thousands of years, since biblical times, why did we have monarchs? Now, true, Yahweh himself should be the king of us at all times. He's the original king. And we, our ancestors, unfortunately, asked for an earthly king. That was a mistake. And we've said that on the radio many times. We repent of what our ancestors did long ago. That was a huge mistake. However, The fact that a monarchy is the most beneficial form of government for a people, that is still a fact. That's why in the scripture it says Yeshua will take the throne as a monarch. Okay, our Heavenly Father is a monarch. He's not going to share authority and power with anybody else. All right. So the idea of monarchy is actually extremely good for our people. And that's why the enemy, through the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, said that one of the primary goals of Jewish Zionism was to destroy the Christian monarchies, because there was power in that. And you have to remember, our monarchs were always crowned first as the defenders of the faith. They weren't crowned to be dictators. They weren't crowned to be all-powerful potentates. They were crowned to be like a grandfather of our people. Their job was to defend the people and defend the faith. That was their primary job. It wasn't to get us intrude in our lives to where they put all kinds of taxes and registrations and licenses and all the nonsense that we have today. That was not the purpose of a monarch. A monarch was because he encapsulated the desires of the people to be righteous. That was the purpose. And it was his job to defend the people from those who were not righteous in the kingdom. That's why the knights of old, etc., were trained in violence, not so that they could lord over people, but so that they could go in, and since they were better trained in violence, they could put down rapists and murderers and thieves and beggars and kidnappers and pedophiles under the orders of the king. And if they found traitors, they went in and took care of them. They maintained law and order by taking out the unrighteous when they showed up in the kingdom. Other than that, the people were to run their lives pretty much the way they saw fit at the local level under the magistrate known as the Shire Reeve or Sheriff. He was the highest official at the county level or the Shire level. And that's normally where all of the adjudication of problems that the people had was done locally at that level, where everybody knew everybody. There was no need to bring in somebody from a higher level or from the castle of the king. He only got involved when it was much more serious and there was no solution at the local level. That's the whole idea of common law. That's the whole idea of biblical Torah law, the Exodus 18 model. As Moses taught it to the Israelites, it's most of the power is at the local level. It's where it should be. People who are righteous know how to live righteously amongst themselves. They don't need some potentate or bureaucrat or monarch to tell them how to do that. They're looking to the monarch for leadership and to know that there's somebody with power who's sitting there as a defender of the race and defender of the faith. Now, I admit, in modern times, we've had some monarchies that have been infiltrated by deceivers and have been polluted with the blood of the serpent seed. Okay, that's a different story. But for thousands of years, the Israelites, as they've traveled as the Parthians, the Scythians, the Vandals, the Goths, the Celts, the Gauls, they had monarchs. I read an article many years ago at Matsir from Ireland, and this article was saying that Ireland has one of the longest successive reigns of kings of any nation on earth.
800 years.
That's what I had heard, 800 years. 800 years straight of kings, successful kings ruling over Ireland. So it can be done. People say, well, you can't be done because they always become a dictator, they always become evil, blah, blah, blah. No. No, it's not true. Sometimes they do, but not always. And besides that, the biblical solution to that was a monarch is elected. You can forget what the Jewish-produced movies are telling you. That's not the way it's supposed to work. It's not inherited. It's elected. And the monarch is responsible to the elders who make up his privy council. They watch him every single day. They advise him, but they also monitor him. And if he gets out of line, and I've got books on my shelf here to talk about the historical times when a king got into power and he let the power go to his head. And the one story for sure was in Parthia. At the time the king became evil, he was deposed by the Privy Council and the people, and his brother was elected as king, and his brother's first official act as the new king was to hunt his brother down and have him executed. That's how it works.
The Jews have known since time immemorial that the monarch has been something to attack. I mean, we can go back as far as the times of Persia, and the Babylonians used to castrate 500 boys and send them to the harems there in Persia, and then they would go out of their way to overthrow the empire. And then you can go further down to even Charles Wisehaupt, and that's obviously more accessible to people these days. Charles Wisehaupt and their plan to overthrow the governments, you know, the Illuminati, and then after that, that fell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've told people for years, there's a reason your greatest enemy hates our monarchies. And you have to ask yourself, why is that? If monarchies are inherently evil and don't work, then why would they say our goal is to destroy the monarchies? That was one of the reasons for World War I and World War II. They used those great wars to dethrone the monarchies and take them over. First of all, by creating tremendous debt, so that the monarchies were in debt to the Jewish bankers. And it also allowed the Jews to infiltrate the families of the royal houses with their daughters. So they had a foot in the door. So again, we have to ask ourselves, you know, why? Why is monarchy so high on their list of things to destroy? And yet, you talk to a group of Caucasians, a group of Israelites anywhere, and you bring up the subject of monarchy, I'm going to tell you, I've had it happen to me. The whole room wants to attack you. The whole room wants to take you outside and tie you to a stake and burn you just for bringing up the subject. It's unbelievable. It's like, what's wrong with you people? You can't see that we're being led to the slaughter with what we got going now, so much so that you won't even talk about or debate an alternative? What's wrong with you people? I was totally amazed. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, they're adamant in their opposition to us. That's for sure. Adamant.
Oh, I know. Stiff-necked. And as I've told Ella and many other people for a long time, I see Ella's here, Elka's here. Hi, Elka. Our people trying to have a discussion with them, trying to teach them something from the true scriptures, it's like herding cats. Okay? You can imagine if somebody gave you a job and said, those 50 cats in that field, I want you to take this bag and I want you to go gather them up. You're going to be there probably for the rest of your life trying to catch those cats. And that's what it's like with our people. It's like herding cats.
Well, they confuse monarchism with despotism, and they don't see that we're living under despotism because they call it democracy. And
right.
Isn't democracy very funny? They never let you vote on anything important. And especially here in Ireland, which I find hilarious, we had votes here to make foreign nationals, when they had their foreigners that came here, when they had children here, we had a vote whether or not they could become Irish, quote unquote, and the people voted no, and they just overturned it. They essentially said, okay, well, the majority of you are racist, and we're just going to overturn it anyway. So that's democracy for you. And we've had other votes here as well, like I can't recall on what. If you don't vote the way they want, they'll just overturn it, and a couple votes then will come in for the other side. That's how democracy works. Financial democracy, as Oswald Mosley said.
Well, we don't have it, and we're not going to vote our way out of this mess. And as George Carlin said, if voting mattered, they wouldn't let you do it. I think it was George Carlin that said that, but whoever said it, he was right. If voting made a difference, they would not let you do it. They let you do it so you have the feeling like you have something to say, but in reality, no, you don't. You don't. They took control of that mechanism long time ago. All right.
Yeah, Carlin.
Hmm?
Carlin was right on a few things, but he was vehemently anti-white.
Oh, yeah. George Carlin was a piece of shit. Excuse my French, but yeah, as a man.
God.
Yeah, as a man, he was a dirtbag. But even so, he did say some things that were very, very true. That one skit where he talked about the club runs the show and we're not in the club, that's one of the most powerful exposés of this whole cabal deep state thing that's out there. So, yeah, as a man, George Carlin, I wouldn't give you a plug nickel for the guy. But did he say some things just like Joan Rivers? I mean, I think Joan Rivers was taken out because of what she said a couple weeks before she supposedly died.
Exposing
Obama as a homosexual and his Michael as a transsexual male to female. So, you know, and a few weeks later, all of a sudden, whether she's actually dead or not, I'm not saying that, but she's taken off the stage, so to speak. Her time on the stage was over because she revealed something that wasn't supposed to be revealed. And George Carlin, the same thing. You know, he got taken off the stage fairly young because he was saying too much truth. So,
well, it's the route that they go about it as well, isn't it? It's the thing of you can inject a lot into people through comedy, you know, because it's just a joke. And
right.
I was even listening to some old George Lincoln Rockwell speeches in work the last couple of nights. And his whole idea of winning the hearts of people. He was very intelligent because he had been in advertising, obviously, prior to becoming a National Socialist. And he really understood that if you get people into a fever pitch, they can hate you, but you can turn that into love. And it's very effective, the way the mind works. Because everyone today is emotional. Facts don't matter at all.
Well, that's the work of Edward Bernays, the Jew in the early 1900s, when he wrote his books on propaganda and controlling the hive mind in marketing. He was the father of both of those, marketing and public relations and propaganda. And if you think about it, they're kind of similar. Propaganda typically is to sell an idea, where marketing is to sell a product. So, but it's based on the same exact models, how to convince people they need something, whether it's an idea or a product, when they really don't. But that's how you do it, through lies, deception, marketing, etc. But emotional people, like you said, people who react emotionally can be manipulated rather easily. Did you have something else, Matt?
No, walk away then.
Oh, okay. Okay, now that's a first. Ralph says here that the governor of Florida, which is Ron DeSantis, has a tranny spouse. I knew she was Jewish, but I did not know she was a tranny. But then again, the governor of the state of Michigan is a former CIA Jewish transsexual. The health secretary from the state of Pennsylvania is a Jewish male to female transsexual. So they do exist. So unbelievable.
Do you guys still have that abomination there?
Hmm?
do you guys still have that transvestite abomination up in the top echelons of government there?
Oh yeah, we do.
You had one there for health, and you had another one there, the bald man that thinks he's a woman that was stealing people's luggage. Is he still in there?
He's still there, as far as I know. All these perverts are still there. Nobody's done a damn thing. That's why I keep hearing about these white hats. It makes me sick. It's like, how much more destruction, how many more innocent lives do we have to see wasted before the white hats are going to make the move? Well, you know, it's because they don't want any mass hysteria and all. What do you call what we're living in right now? Okay, tell me this is normal. This isn't mass hysteria that we got right now. And I just don't buy it. I'm a plain and simple farm boy. I believe in what the Father says. I believe what the Holy Spirit tells me. I believe what the Scriptures, when they're properly translated, say. And none of those say, work in the dark, and because you're afraid the people might not be able to handle the truth, you go ahead and let millions of people suffer from poisons called vaccinations, let them suffer from infanticide, some people call it abortion, let them suffer from wars that were never meant to win, from poisons in the sky, poisons in the water, poisons in the food. Excuse me, but I don't see the logic, and I also don't believe it's true. Not me personally, because I can't throw in with that crowd. You speak truth boldly, you act in good faith, and leave the rest up to the Father. If the people can't handle it, that's their problem. Okay? If I went in with an army of righteous men and started hanging these bastards like they needed to be done, I could care less if people can handle it. Because most of these people that would be upset, they're not going to do anything to stop you. They're not going to take up arms. Most of them are cowards. All right, so what in the hell is there to worry about?
You mentioned there the truth of the Scripture, and I've often had conversations with folks, not in person but online, about the two seed line message, and they'd be on board with you about a lot of stuff, but they don't accept the fact that the Jews are Satan's children, and they won't accept the Hebrew. First of all, for Genesis, they won't accept it. But one of the things that I always point out is Yahshua, anything that he said that he didn't want the Jews and the multitude around to understand were parables. But in John 8:44, he called them children of the devil. And I always noticed that they didn't ask him to say, oh, explain this parable. Because it wasn't a parable, and yet people will reject it.
Yeah, I don't understand people that do that. I really don't. Besides, you don't have to go to the Hebrew. Go to the Septuagint Bible, which is in Greek. Go to common sense. Go to empirical evidence. Go to scientific evidence. Go to historicity. All of those things pointed out. In fact, I have a dictionary on my shelf right over here, is the New Thayer's Greek Lexicon, and it was produced in the 1980s, and under the word eudaios, which is the Greek word that we see translated as Jew most of the time, it says right in that dictionary that in the Greek language, the writings of John wrote of the people we call Jews today as if they were antithetical and the opposite of Christ and his disciples. In fact, it was as if they sprang from an alien race. That's right out of a college dictionary of the Greek language. Okay? Why do you think in the 1600s in America, preachers went to William and Mary College and many of the other colleges like Harvard, Yale, and all those that were seminaries? Okay, William and Mary in the 1600s was a seminary. To become a freshman at William and Mary College, you had to be able to read, write, speak, and debate in ancient Greek. And when I read that many years ago, I thought to myself, why would you require somebody who wanted to go and be a preacher to be able to do all that in ancient Greek? And then many years later, I found out why. Because the English, German, French, Spanish translations are often in error. But if you have the Greek manuscripts, there is no error. It makes perfect sense. Case in point, when the scriptures in English says, don't do this to your brother, the word brother is Adelphos in the Greek, and that word literally means from the womb. So it's a pictographic language, much like ancient Hebrew was a pictographic language. So it's a compound word, Adelphos. Delphos is the word for the womb. So Adelphos means from the womb. And that's the word for my brother. He was from the womb. The womb of what? Abraham and Sarah. Sarah's womb, white people. So when those scriptures, but in English, the word brother could mean lots of different things. I once had a family member of me say, anybody that's human is my brother. I said, really? That's funny. The only people that spoke Greek for thousands of years were white people. It wasn't Eskimos or Negroes in Africa or Asiatics. They didn't speak Greek. Our people spoke Greek. The scriptures were written in Aramaic and Greek. That's our language. That's not the language of all these other people.
But so they don't even understand what human means.
Yeah, well,
that's the root of the problem.
Yeah. Oh, I had an argument
here on Christmas with the folks here, and because I was giving out about blacks, and I was saying that they're not Irish, and they said, well, they're born here, like, and I said, well, that's not the definition of a nation. And so they go and Google the word nation. And I'm like, but you don't understand. I had a few beers in me at the time, so I wasn't able to articulate myself correctly, you know. But I'm like, that's not what nation means. Nation is a race. It's not just an amalgamated group of people that are stuffed together in the lands. That's not a nation. Dan, what was the name of that Bible that you gave the definition for? Because you had mentioned it before, and I went to look it up, and I couldn't find it. The definition for Jew.
It's not in a Bible. It's in a lexicon. It's a dictionary.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's called the New Thayer's Greek English Lexicon.
Thank you.
Okay, now if you want a version of that on the internet, there is a version of this very same lexicon on the internet for free. It's called Blue Letter Bible. Now, you have to be online to use it, but Blue Letter Bible will let you do word studies. They have many of the commentaries, many of the different languages, many of the different English translations, but they also have the concordances and lexicons that I have on my shelf right here in the Greek and the Hebrew. They have those very versions because I looked it up one day on Blue Letter Bible. I looked up Eudaios, and it's verbatim what's on the hard copy I have sitting on my shelf. So Blue Letter Bible, you can go right there and look up Eudaios in their New Thayer's Greek English Lexicon, and you'll see in that definition where they talk about that. It's as if the Jews sprang from an alien race. Now, I like to use eSword, which is also a free version, because eSword you can download onto your computer, and then if the internet's not available for some strange reason, you can still use your eSword because it's all downloaded to your hard drive. And so I like to have both of them available. But eSword has many of the same exact things available to you. Commentaries, dictionaries, they've got Strong's Concordance, they've got New Thayer's, they've got Brown Divers and Briggs, which is the equivalent to Thayer's in the Hebrew language. And again, I ordered my set which is the interlinear, four volumes of the interlinear Bible and the four volumes of the Hebrew Greek lexicons. The only way to get them when I got them was in the 1980s, and that had to come as a hard copy. And they're beautiful books, beautiful with leather bindings and everything. So a wealth of information. Plus, what I'm glad it started out that way, because what I found out with these electronic lexicons and concordances, especially Strong's, you have to be careful because they have truncated the definitions of many of the words. And the only reason I know that is because my first studies in identity were with these hard copy books. And you used to have to thumb through the pages till you found the word you were looking for. And they sometimes would take a whole page and a half in their defining of a single word. Whereas most of these electronic ones have truncated it. And many times they've cut out some of the more important interpretations. Just like Eve in the garden, in the actual Hebrew of the words that are used there, it's not that she ate fruit. The fruit was the fruit of her activity. Just like we say the fruit of that guy is evil. They're not talking about a tree like apples and fruit and trees. They're talking about your actions. Eve's actions that day is what condemned her. Her actions with Nakash, a evil, cunning, and deceptive man. Okay.
I might pick your brain. I think you're right about the you're definitely right about the lexicons nowadays. I have a Strong's here, a Brown Driver Briggs, and I have a Thayer's. But I was listening to Wesley Swift before, and he was saying that the first time that beast comes up in Genesis, that it was Enosh, that's what it translated to. And then when I looked it up in my Strong's, it wasn't Enosh. I think it's Che.
That's a creature.
I don't know. Yeah,
right.
It's a living thing. I don't know if you can expound on whether maybe he was wrong there or whether it has been changed.
I'd have to go look into that a little bit, but Enosh is one of the numerous words that the ancient Hebrews had for a man, because Ish is a man, Isha, a female. Enosh is another form of man, and there's, I think, two others. And each of them has a different definition. So ancient Hebrew and Greek are both that way. Context has a lot to do with it, and we don't translate them properly. We just put man in there. And that's a mistake.
Yeah.
If you don't further describe man, then that's why people get confused and think it could be any old man. No, it's not. Their words were very, very particular. We were called Adam because we have reddish cheeks and we blush in the face. We were called Adam. Enosh could be any kind of creature, male creature. Could be a man, might not be a man, might be something else. Ish was typically used for just general men, not any particular race, etc. Like British, okay, the people of the covenant, British, Irish, the people, the men of Ireland. Okay, so Ish was any kind of man. So again, you have to go back. English is a terrible translation because we do not at least put footnotes as to which of these versions of that word they use. At the very least, they should have said ordinary man or Adamic man being white men. They should have put white men in there or Caucasians or something that would show that there was a differentiation there. And they didn't do that. Or when they put beasts of the field, well, that was Che. It just meant creatures, not necessarily four-legged beasts. It just meant creatures. Not man creatures, because men had different terms, but just creatures. So, again, context has to play a part, and that's, again, why I tell people you must have the Apostolic Bible Polyglot, which is the Septuagint version. That's available at eSword. If you put that on your computer, you can get a copy of that. The scriptures, which were produced in South Africa, that's another version that's available. The English Standard Version is available, which is pretty good. The World English Bible has Yahweh in it, the way it should be. That's available. The Bible in Basic English is pretty accurate. It's available, as well as the King James with and without the Strong's numbers, Greek versions with and without Strong's numbers. You name it. It's all there, and it's free. It's free. A powerful, powerful tool in the hand of our people, and yet very few people take advantage of it. I've met very few people in all the years that I've traveled teaching all of these things that I have discovered. Yahweh has put before me as I travel down these rabbit holes with languages. For some reason, I just love studying languages. And the things that were revealed to me just by simply going down those rabbit holes, doing a little bit of book study, and you were amazed at what you could find out and how wrong the teachings are that we have today. Just completely wrong. Like, thou shalt not kill. Wrong. That's not what it says. Thou shalt not murder. Big difference. Thou shalt not commit adultery. That's a bullshit story. Thou shalt not mongrelize. Well, that makes perfect sense, because he doesn't want us to mongrelize our plants, our vegetables, our animals, or our children. You don't mongrelize any of those things. You don't have a right to go out and crossbreed different trees and plants and vegetables and fruits and dogs and cats and cattle and horses. That's not your job. He created perfect creatures, creatures upon the earth. He didn't give us license to go out and try to make something better. And what we find out is every time man does that, he weakens the creature. He doesn't make it better. Just like a mule mated with a horse, what do you get? Or I'm sorry, not a mule, but a donkey. You mix a donkey with a horse, what do you get? A mule. And guess what? Mules are what? Sterile. So if you want more mules, you have to get more donkeys to mate with more horses and create the aberration called a mule by mixing donkeys and horses. We have our dogs intermixed with each other now because man has gotten in the way. My sister had dogs to a Chihuahua and I think it was a Jack Russell or something like that. I can't remember now, but two different breeds. They had five puppies, and all five puppies had major, major health problems their entire life because they were a mixed breed. Why in the world do we find it so hard to obey simple rules? Our Father gave us simple rules. You obey them, you get blessed.
We could drop a commandment if adultery and covetousness meant one and the same. But I think that this is one of the ways that our Father has put a delusion over us, as you were saying about the English language, the way we just lump all of these things in together. It's not like the German language per se or any of the older languages where one word can mean a plethora of things.
Mm-hmm. The devil was in the details.
But most people won't bother to look into the etymology, which is, I don't even think our Father really had to try very hard to put a delusion over us, because if you lump the words in together, he knows that most of us aren't going to bother anyway.
Well, he said, I'm going to send them that strong delusion because they no longer love the truth. There's the problem. There's the rub. Our people don't care about the truth anymore. I mean, the evidence of what's actually true is all around us. Okay? Evidence of what just like I said, race mixing, whether you're talking about dogs, cats, horses, donkeys, or people, it's all the same. Just go ask the farmers and ranchers, what happens when you mix the breeds? Oh, we get more milk from this one over here. Yeah, but she's got a weak back. I talked to a rancher one time. Yeah, that's true. I get more milk out of this breed, but I got to be very careful because every time the bull gets on top of her, meaning the heifers, many of them, their backs break because their bones are too small and too brittle.
You know what I run into a lot of the time, Dan, a misconception I run into, and my mother and her husband have said it a few times, to say that the mongrel dogs are better than the thoroughbreds because they run into less health problems, because the likes of boxers, for example, have bad knees when they get older. I don't know.
I think, first of all, they get their facts mixed up. I dare say that's not true.
Dan, they don't have any facts. This is it. They just spew
this stuff out to shut you up.
Regurgitation. But right. I mean, I wouldn't even bring it up. They would just be saying it in casual conversation. And I'm just like, I'm not even going to argue with you because what's the point?
Well, the first thing I tell them to do is, okay, go down to the racetrack and tell those guys with those thoroughbred horses out there that, you know, you could mix them with a different breed and they'd get a faster horse. They'll laugh you right out of the building. All right?
Yeah.
Everybody knows the strongest and best racehorses are thoroughbreds. They've always been thoroughbreds. Always. Same thing with dogs. You go into the dog racetracks and all. Do they put mongrels out there or do they put thoroughbreds out there?
Yeah. I was talking to...
Oh, but there was a movie. There was a movie made by a painted horse that beat the Arabian purebreds in a race across the desert. Yeah, that was a movie. You can make anything happen in a movie. But what about real life? Where people's horses that cost multiple millions of dollars, if you was to try to mate them with a mongrel, they'd shoot you. People got their heads up their asses. That's what's wrong today, because of movies and television. They think movies and television are fact, when anybody with a brain that functions at any level knows it's not. But they can't get past it. And I hate to say it, I've got dear ones in my family that are obsessed with that same nonsense, that if it's on television, it must be true. Where in the hell would you get a notion like that? How could anybody say something as silly as that? If it's television, it must be true. Guess again. I think not. Okay. I'm wore out. great discussion, though. Great discussion. Anybody have anything, any closing remarks or anything before we shove off?
Pleasure chatting as always, Dan.
Pleasure here, too, buddy. Yahweh bless. And your father.
You too, brother. I'll let him know.
All right, thanks. Yahweh bless. Anybody else before we take off for the night? All right. It was another great, great, great conversation with the family, the true family. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask your blessing upon each and every one that loves you and loves the truth. We just pray that you would give us the stamina to withstand these zombies that we must live amongst, even those of our own kind. It is not easy, but we know that there's a reward at the end of it. We are overcomers. We're going to be here. We don't give up. We're not the kind that run away from a fight. We're here for the duration. We trust you in all things. And we're just going to keep preaching that truth, and we're just going to keep pounding that drum as long as you give us life, Father Yahweh. And we're doing it for your glory and for your kingdom, not our own. We don't deserve it. That's just the honest truth. We don't deserve any of it. But you do. You created this beautiful world. You put mankind upon this earth and gave us a commission, and we've walked away from it, and we've allowed it to become a cesspool. That's our shame that we carry, not yours. But we do ask that you would raise up that Ezekiel 37 army, that we could fulfill Obadiah verse 18 in the very near future. Until that time, walk with us and guide us in all that we say and do to thy glory and for thy kingdom. And always we ask that you protect us from our enemies. In Yahweh's precious name we pray. Hallelujah.